This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. Politicians campaign on promises, but govern in economic realities and foreign events that have a way of turning those promises into dust. Despite reports of record corporate profits and record low unemployment, General Motors announced this week the closing of five plants, including plants in Lordstown and Warren, Ohio, and the layoffs of over 14,000 workers. Beyond that, thousands of jobs with suppliers will be lost. We are joined today by Karen Kassler of Ohio Public Radio, who sat down this week for a wide-ranging interview with the departing Ohio Governor John Kasich. It's part of the State of the Ohio series that she does with Kasich over the years, and it will be, you can view the entire thing this Sunday at 12:30 on CET here in Cincinnati. And we're also joined by WVXU politics reporter Howard Wilkinson. To join the discussion, call 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Twitter and Facebook. Karen, Howard, welcome to Cincinnati Edition.
Thank you.
Great to talk to you.
Must be Friday.
Yeah.
So, Karen, when President Trump first publicly responded to the General Motors announcement, you could tell in his voice there was real anger, characterizing it almost as a personal affront. The response that you heard from Governor Kasich, I'd like to listen to just a little bit of that and then have you talk a little bit about what you were hearing from Governor Kasich on this.
Sure.
This is pure economics. This is what a free enterprise system is, and we have to take care of the workers, but it's very painful. I mean, Lordstown has been, you know, a critical part of that whole region up there, and it's a sad day.
So that was a much more, maybe it was because there was a little bit more time, I don't know, but it's a different kind of response. How did you react to that? Think of that.
Yeah, that was interesting. We sat down. It was our seventh interview that we've done since he first ran for office in 2010. And I've been fortunate to have the time with him since he's spent a lot of time out of state. So it was interesting to have that moment with him right after the announcement about Lordstown and the shutdown. And, you know, this was a man who campaigned in 2010, really going hard about how Ohio needed to be more competitive and needed to keep companies in the state, needed to keep jobs, that Ohio's job level was so low. And then this happened as he's basically walking out the door. And his reaction compared to the reactions of people like Democratic Senator Sherrod Brown and Democratic Congressman Tim Ryan, who were very, very angry and frustrated, Kasich's reaction was a lot more laid back, a lot more, this is what happens. The company isn't making money. I've tried to talk to them about this. And, you know, he said later on, a couple days later, when he was here at the State House for an event, and I got a chance to talk to him again, just to kind of clarify the answer. And he said, you know, this is economics. We're trying to work with the company to see if maybe the facility can be retooled. Maybe another product line can come in. Maybe another auto parts manufacturer could come in. But he didn't want to give false hope to the community that something would change. And it was just really a very different reaction than we saw from the anger that Senator Brown and Congressman Ryan and even Senator Portman, Rob Portman had a little bit in terms of his frustration.
Howard, how did you see the reaction of these various major political figures?
Well, I think obviously Karen's right about, you know, Kasich's reaction was very much different from all of the others from Trump on down. And I think part of it is that Trump or Kasich kind of looks at it and says, well, you know, I'm still talking to him. I'm still talking. We're still, you know, it's not, you know, it's not hopeless. There are other alternatives. And he's always tried to, you know, when something like this happens, introduce, you know, some kind of solution to the problem rather than just get mad and go off the handle on it. Now, you know, there were a whole lot of politicians who made a whole lot of promises to the people of Lordstown and the people who worked at that plant. And now it becomes apparent that they can't keep those promises. Mm-hmm. And you can start with Donald Trump. And what you said at the beginning is absolutely true. that this is not just about Lordstown and the Chevy Cruze. This is about all kinds of smaller companies all over the state of Ohio that make parts for this car and other cars.
One of the things that Governor Kasich held out in your conversation, Karen, was the idea that he sort of cited the plant in Dayton that had been closed down and has now been converted into, as I understand it, a glass manufacturing supply, part of the supply chain for automobiles, and said that, well, there's more people working there now than used to be working there when it was an auto assembly plant. Are those jobs as good a jobs as would have been there when it was operating differently?
Well, I think that the auto industry has definitely changed over time, that the jobs that you'll hear people talk about that were, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, where the you worked for the auto plant and that's where you worked for the rest of your life, those jobs really don't seem to exist as much anymore in terms of pay and benefits and lifelong longevity, so to speak. Kasich has talked about that plant, that Fuyao auto glass manufacturing plant there in Kettering, as being an example of what can be done in terms of retooling facilities and coming up with better jobs. And he brings that out as an opportunity there. So I think that's what he's hoping will happen. But, you know, NPR had a piece yesterday with a woman who went back to Janesville, Wisconsin, which had lost a big GM plant many years ago. And they're tearing that thing down now. So who knows what the future is like here?
You know, did Governor Kasich say anything, or for that matter, the other Ohio politicians that we talked about, Senators Portman, Senator Brown, say anything about the administration's tariff policies, particularly as it relates to steel? And GM didn't cite that, but Ford has cited that as one of the problems for their cutbacks.
Absolutely. I mean, the governor did mention it, but he never said President Trump's name in his comment about that. He made that comment a couple of days later about the tariffs have been a problem, especially when the company wasn't, there wasn't much of a margin of profitability to begin with, and the tariffs are an issue there. And then when pressed on that to find out if he wanted to, you know, make this about President Trump, he said, I'm just going to leave my statement there. Though he has, in the past, not been shy about calling out President Trump for all sorts of things that he disagrees with him on.
And
so I was surprised to hear him.
And we're going
to
come back
to him not take that opportunity.
Yeah. We're going to come back to that because he talks with you a lot about his own future in relationship to the presidency. And we'll talk about that sort of after the break. But we have some calls, and Julie has called in with a question, and I think it raises some issues about timing of GM's announcement. Julie, what's your question?
Yes, I wanted to know if the panel had any sense of why GM waited until after Election Day to make this announcement. I just the timing just seems so interesting, so to speak.
Howard?
I'll take my call, the answer offline. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Julie.
I think there are some questions about the timing of this. Here it is, the holiday season, the election's over. You know, I think the question about timing is a legitimate one, and I don't know that GM has fully answered that if it's been asked at the corporate level.
If they were doing this to give cover to some politicians in Ohio or Donald Trump, It still does not make them look very good. Anytime a large corporation shuts down a major manufacturing facility, and several of them around the country, a few weeks before the holidays, they're going to look bad. They're going to look like Uncle Scrooge, and probably deserve to be.
Well, Daniel has called in and has maybe a slightly different perspective on that question of what GM's doing. Daniel, what's your observation question?
Yeah, I think it's just important to note that if GM's looking to the future and the types of cars that they're going to be building in it, an electric vehicle and hybrids tend to have far fewer components. They don't have a traditional industrial or internal combustion engine or a transmission, and those are your two have biggest components within a car. So it's just going to take less labor, less man hours to produce that type of vehicle than it will today's cars.
Well, I think what Daniel's bringing up here is a really important point. Mm. That, and I think the governor was hinting at this too. It's not just that the Cruise wasn't selling well, mm-hmm. but sedans in general aren't selling well, and that there's even an underlying shift in the market that goes far beyond just any one make or model.
Yeah. I think he's absolutely right. You know, this whole industry is changing, and it's going to change fairly quickly around the country because people are going to demand it. They're going to demand something else. And that's going to be, as he says, much less labor intensive. It will need fewer workers. And, of course, you know, the unions are not going to like this at all.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there was some criticism of what the governor said to me online from people who said, hey, he went after Ted Strickland really hard in 2010 for the loss of NCR.
That's right.
And why was that okay for him to go after him like that? But then when there's job loss on his watch, it's somehow, that's economics, that's politics, or economics rather, not politics. But I think, you know, later on he clarified by saying that, hey, there was a big difference. Companies sometimes just up and move, and that's what happened with NCR. Mm-hmm. With GM, things are changing. The business is changing. And so he said it wasn't an apples to oranges situation.
Well, you know, a couple of observations here. One is about the automobile industry is that the cars that are not selling that well are the smaller, more fuel efficient. And our gas prices are so low at the moment, people aren't being driven to more fuel-efficient cars, which certainly reflects also not just on the economics but also on the concerns about environment. And we're going to be focusing on the environment on Monday. And I have that, you know, that there are implications here, environmental implications, that we're going to stress SUVs and trucks.
Yeah. But is the Trump administration going to continue that push?
Oh, I don't know.
In that direction.
And the other thing that I've noticed, and in fact, there was just someone I saw, someone I'm connected to on Facebook just yesterday, celebrating the fact that they don't own a car, haven't owned a car for 5 years, and hope that they will never have to own a car.
Well, that's good, but you know, that's not most of America.
That's not most of America, but it's
an increasing
number of younger people.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Especially in cities where they do have very sophisticated public transportation systems.
And that's changing the environment.
Right.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley.
I just can't tell you where this is all going to come out. I don't have a timetable now. I have to watch events and just see what I can do to contribute.
Republican Governor John Kasich is increasingly talking about and also taking steps to run for president in 2020. To discuss what his prospects are, we are joined today by Ohio Public Radio reporter Karen Kassler, who sat down earlier this week with Governor Kasich, and WVXU politics reporter Howard Wilkinson. To join the discussion, call 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. Well, Karen, when the whole topic of running for president, which he's done twice, so he's been down this track, especially back in 16, 2 years ago. What sort of his frame of mind? You know, he wants to find out how he can serve, but what did you read from all of that?
Well, fortunately, I didn't have to ask the question because he had already broken the news, such as it is, news. I kind of put that in quotes, I guess, on ABC's This Week the day before, where he said that he was seriously considering running for president, which again, it's not a surprise to any of us, I think, that he might be thinking about this. But the question is still, where would he be in the pack of people who possibly are considering doing the same thing? If he wants to primary the president, that's a bigger deal than saying, I want to run. And so I asked him specifically about the idea of him kind of trying to occupy this moderate Republican lane, because that seems to be the way national media has treated him, as a moderate Republican. He's not a moderate. He said that very clearly. He is a conservative. He says he's not an ideologue, though there are people who would disagree with him on that. But he says that what he feels about some issues such as gun control and the environment are common sense issues. And so he thinks that's maybe where people find this idea of him being a moderate at. But he's not a moderate. And you know, I find conversations with people from out of Ohio, they refer to him as a moderate. And I keep trying to correct them. He's not a moderate. He has not been a moderate his entire 8 years here as governor. And I wouldn't expect him to run as such.
Well, Karen, you and I've said this many times on this show and elsewhere. I mean, we listen to people around the country talk about, you know, some of the pundits and such talk about John Kasich in terms that we don't even recognize this person.
Right?
Who are they talking about? This is not the guy that we know, this peacemaker. I'm just in it for everybody to love everybody.
Yeah. That's the lane that I think he's really tried to carve out for himself.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Bipartisan, you know, but there are plenty of Democrats who would point to, hey, he hasn't exactly been bipartisan with us. There have been plenty of times that we've wanted to have him on our side and he hasn't been there for us. And so, you know, it's that I think is right now what he and to some degree, I think Sherrod Brown is also wrestling with where do they find themselves in the party, in their respective parties, mm-hmm. as the parties stand in 2018. I think they both want to play a voice, or they both want to play a role. They both want to have a voice. And so talking about running for president gives them that opportunity right away to have that voice and to speak about the things that they're concerned about.
Well, if he's going to get there, he's probably, you know, he is going to have to go through a primary, putting aside any really extreme situation. He's going to have to go through a primary against a sitting president, Donald Trump, who has an incredibly strong base, especially of primary voters. Howard, what do you think Governor Kasich may have learned from 2016 that would make him more viable against Trump in 2020?
I don't know. I think the thing that he does not know, it's easier to say what he doesn't know than what he does know about this. What he doesn't know is how is Donald Trump going to be perceived by those voters you were talking about a year from now? Mm-hmm. You know, is he going to be able to keep them on the reservation, or are they going to get tired of the rhetoric and the divisiveness and that sort of thing? I mean, it's almost a gamble. It's like rolling dice. He doesn't know how that's going to come out, and that's going to have a lot to do with his decision, I think, on whether or not he would actually challenge a sitting president. The alternative, running as an independent. That's even harder.
Yeah. If you want to win.
If you want to win. Yeah. If you want to influence the process, and if you want to make bring your issues to the forefront and make the other candidates talk about them, it's a pretty good way to go. But it's not a good way to become president.
And I would say that, you know, when he says that he doesn't have a timeline right now, I think some of this is related to perhaps what's happening right now, what we're seeing play out with the whole Mueller investigation, mm-hmm. and where that ends up. I think, you know, Kasich and certainly many other Republican potential candidates are looking at that and trying to figure out where they would stand if indeed Donald Trump falls in that. Obviously, no one knows what's going to happen with that. And I think that's one of the reasons why Kasich says, I don't have a timeline here. I don't know what I'm going to do. I can tell you one thing for certain. He's not going to be governor in about a month and a half. And so he will be looking for opportunities. And he says, you know, right now that's one of the ones he's looking at.
Well, he's 66 years old right now. So he'd be 68 in 2020. I mean, this is it, right? Doesn't he have – if he's going to run, this is really
– probably,
that
yeah.
timeline is right. there?
Yeah. It probably is. Now,
but
there's
I mean,
no timeline
you know,
on selling
how old
books.
Is Donald Trump?
Well, right now he's 72.
Yeah, he's 72. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know if, you know, I think the age issue is not nearly as big a deal, perhaps, as it was 20 or 30 years ago. But, yeah, right. I mean, you do start talking about a presidential campaign is a grueling, it's a marathon of epic proportions. And so to go through that at an advanced age is probably something a lot of people would not want to consider doing.
So what do you think he has to do in the next 3 to 4 months? Because the clock is ticking. If this is going to be a primary, this is going to be an early 2020 race that he has to run. I mean, he's basically got to be in pretty early in the next year. So what's going to make his decision? What's going to tip it one way or the other? He can only hold out to see what the Mueller investigation says right. for so long.
He's running out of time. Yes.
And I think some of it depends, too, on what other candidates who, frankly, have more money and better name recognition want to do. I mean, if you know, somebody like a Michael Bloomberg or somebody like Jeff Flake, who has a very high profile right now.
Or Ted Cruz,
or, you know, some of these other candidates who have gotten more notoriety over the last couple of years, not that Kasich's unknown, and we've talked about this before, he's likely more popular outside of Ohio than he is inside of Ohio, especially with Republicans, particularly in the base. Yeah. You know, I think he has to see what other candidates potentially might be doing and make his decision based a little bit on that, at least.
But I think he really does have to make it fairly soon, you know, within the next few months, because, you know, really presidential politics, this has already started. And we're not that far away from Iowa. We're not that far away from New Hampshire. And, you know, if you're going to do it, it's time to get on with it.
Yep.
We're New Hampshire, where Kasich has been fairly recently.
Exactly.
I should note that.
His favorite, yeah.
Yes.
So, Karen, one thing, he still has a little bit of time left as governor. There's a lame duck session. What's the dynamic here in terms of how things end up in the next few weeks between Kasich and the legislature, which hasn't always been an easy relationship?
No, it has not. And I think that's going to start showing here. I mean, Kasich has issued 48 vetoes in the 2-year cycle of the General Assembly that we're in right now, and they have already overridden 12 of them. And there are a couple big ones that potentially are out there. There was the one that I think most people are keeping an eye on, which was the state lawmakers wanted to freeze enrollment in Medicaid expansion. They put that in the budget. Kasich vetoed that. That's potentially on the table. That could leave 400,000 people who are on Medicaid expansion right now without health care coverage, and it would change Ohio's Medicaid expansion to a partial expansion. So that's a really, really big deal if they choose to override that. I asked Kasich about that. He said he's not in negotiations with the House or Senate on that. They understand the issue, and he's going to wait to see what happens. Then there are also these two other bills that the legislature appears to be on the verge of passing, the so-called Stand Your Ground self-defense bill that Kasich has said he would veto, and the 6-week heartbeat abortion ban. And the Kasich has also said that he opposes. And so it'd be very interesting to see the legislature give him those bills, knowing he's going to veto them and knowing that they have enough time to override those vetoes. And I think that's what we're watching for.
And also, if he knows his actions on those bills will then become part of the discussion if he runs for president.
Mm. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yep, I mean, it'll be a big part of it. Yeah. Be the central part of it.
So what happens in these next few weeks, even though it looks like, oh, we're just coasting to Christmas and
he has a lot of riding on these issues.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so, I swear, the last couple lame duck sessions that I've been here, there never seems to be a coasting toward Christmas. You know, if it's the end of a legislative session, there's all sorts of stuff that people want to get done, and they want to get it done before the legislature turns over. Because as most people know, or maybe not, if a bill doesn't pass now that was introduced in the last 2 years, they have to start all over again. And the beginning of the year starts the budget process. That's the big deal. That'll suck up all the air in the room. And so people who want to get things done, it's really now or wait a while.
By the way, we're